We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We've got some interesting rookies getting called up. We've got some veterans playing the best they have in years. We've got a whole bunch of pickups here on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast right after this. Welcome, everybody, to the Saturday edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Eric Holtzman here with my co-host, Ryan Boyer. And as always, we've got a fab show today. I think we still probably need to do one, even though maybe the most significant pitcher injury in the last few days was Kyle Freeland, who probably wasn't on anybody's team. Should we keep the fab show going or just come up with a new topic?
I hope Kyle Freeland was not a relevant injury, but hey. Some of these guys play in very deep leagues, so you never know.
I don't think I'm rostering Kyle Freeland in anything but a Coors Field only league, but yeah, maybe. It's probably one or two people are replacing Kyle Freeland. Let's start with the headlines today before we get on to the big fab buys and the budget fab buys that make up the bulk of today's show. Some of the injuries that we are tracking recently. Francisco Alvarez, thumb injury, got an MRI. Turns out it was indeed bad enough to hit the injured list, and he's also getting more tests. So none of the direction that this thing is trending in seems good at the moment, even if we don't necessarily have the final diagnosis. Initially looked like a jam. It seems like it is a sprain, not a break or a tear, but going to miss a meaningful amount of time. What's the situation like in the Mets catcher room now? Is it Omar Narvaez?
Yeah, Omar Narvaez at the top of the depth chart. I think him and Tomas Nito will probably wind up sharing that job pretty evenly. Certainly out of the two of them, if you're pretty desperate for catching help, which catchers are pretty solid position right now. So I don't know if you need to go as deep as Omar Narvaez, but wasn't that long ago that he was fantasy relevant. So if you're kind of in a tough situation with your catcher situation, then maybe you can look his direction. But yeah, Francisco Alvarez, as you mentioned, still waiting to hear more on the injury, but a sprain, I mean, technically is some damage to his UCL. Those generally involve a 5-6 week absence. I don't want to assume that's going to be the case with him. Hopefully we'll find out some news better than that, but certainly has the potential to be longer than a minimum stay on the injured list. He'd been off to a solid start and moved up in the Mets lineup after batting a little lower initially. So that's it's a bummer to lose Francisco Alvarez. I guess maybe Travis d'Arnaud might still be available. He had a 3-homer game yesterday. That could be a possibility, but catcher, especially in one catcher leagues, I think it's not too difficult to find help on the waiver wire.
Yeah, I noticed when I was putting together our list today, Ryan Jeffers kept being somebody who was picked up fairly frequently in those one catcher leagues. No direct relation to the Francisco Alvarez news, but maybe a guy to look into. He's been a decent or better hitter, at least since the start of last year.
He's been hitting second regularly, too, for the Twins lately.
Yeah, so potentially Jeffers would be the first stop if you're looking to replace Alvarez in a one catcher league. And like you said, more than the minimum here. So I know some people, when their catcher goes down, I don't want to waste a bench spot on my injured catcher. I'm just going to take a zero for a week. I think this one is long enough that I would definitely not take that route. Other injury news this week, AJ Puck. He has had an awful start to the year after getting plenty of hype after making the rotation. And it's now been decided that his awful start to the year is due to a shoulder injury. Presumably, this is a real shoulder injury of some kind, although the Marlins have not yet said any of the very serious words related to it. They've only really said fatigue. So kind of looks to me like not quite a phantom IL stint, but something close to it, right? Something where I don't think we should be expecting Puck to be affected by this shoulder fatigue for the rest of the season. We should just expect the Marlins to be taking him out of the fire line a bit and then probably bringing him back, maybe even as a reliever. Is that your read here?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can probably put injury in quotation marks. The Marlins are in a situation with their rotation that they probably can't necessarily afford to be using phantom IL stunts, but AJ Puck had been so bad that apparently Rodri Munoz is a viable fill-in right now, at least for the short term. Still waiting on Braxton Garrett to work his way back. He was seemed like he was maybe going to come back this week, but then he had a quote-unquote dead arm phase. He's still in the midst of getting ramped back up. He could be back still, but potentially before the end of the month, but a little bit more time for him. He is someone to – I know you were pretty keen on him during draft season. He's someone to, I think, worthy of stashing if he's available. Ryan Weathers, too. Now, what was the – I don't know if it was an injury that his last a real injury that he left with his last outing. Maybe it was a hand thing.
It was cramping in his left hand.
Cramping in his hand. Yeah, I knew it was like not a big deal. Yeah. Not something that's going to keep him from making his next start. Doesn't seem. And he's been surprisingly good. Velocity's been up a little bit, given the Ryan Weathers' track record. I can see why people would be a little leery of that, but I think he's viable in deeper leagues as well. And if everybody was healthy, there's a chance he would be going back to the bullpen. That's definitely not the case now. I think Ryan Weathers has a rotation spot if he, assuming this hand cramp is no big deal. AJ Puck, though, on the other hand, as you mentioned, it's probably time to send him back to the bullpen. I think that's ultimately where he fits better anyway, but we'll see what the Marlins say once he gets over this definitely for real shoulder injury.
Yeah. Yeah. If your roster size is big enough that you have the luxury of being able to hold on to AJ Puck through this, or hey, if you have injured list spots, then you're very happy that he has a definitely for real shoulder injury, because you get to keep him on your roster. There's a very real chance that when he comes back, he is in the bullpen and maybe is the best reliever in Miami, right? I think it's more likely he closes than he provides fantasy value as a good starter, right?
100%. I was going to say his best path to fantasy value this season, if he's going to have any, is probably if he's closing games.
So if you can hold on to him, maybe. But again, this is a guy who has been really bad and is currently injured and is, you know, it's only speculation that says he's going to close. It would make some sense one day, but I'm not carving out a space to keep Puck. Certainly not. Would also keep an eye out on if we hear anything about this changing plans for Max Meyer. The talk right before Puck hit the injured list, well, not the talk, the actual official plan from the Marlins was we're sending him down. Max Meyer's going to work three innings a week in the AAA for however long we need, and then we're going to bring him back at some point. Yeah. Now, that again, that was before this news with Puck, although it wasn't before Puck was pitching so bad. So maybe nothing's going to change. And I haven't seen anything saying the Marlins are going to change plans. So I guess we assume that this hasn't changed anything and that Meyer is still going to be in the minors for quite a bit.
I would guess, yeah, it's probably not going to change anything. I mean, given the Marlins' situation, I don't know that if you ask them off the record, are you already kind of punting on this season? They might nod their heads yes. So for that reason, I think probably they're just going to stick with the plan with Max Meyer, just keep his – I don't know if they're going to rush him back into the rotation. So I would not expect us necessarily to see him anytime soon.
Yep, right there with you. It's at best a long shot that they say, wait a second, this guy's actually good. More injury news. Tristan Casas, he left today's game with an injury. Is it still listed as undisclosed, I believe, as of right now? An apparent side injury. You know, this could be an oblique tear. As of right now, it isn't, but it was enough to knock him out of the game. If Casas does have to hit the injured list and does miss time, that would be yet another injury in Boston. I guess, is it just Bobby Dalbec just plays first base and we try not to think too much about that?
I guess it would probably be him. I know they got Rob Refsnyder back as well, and they plan to work him in at first base. But I would guess it's probably Bobby Dalbec. That would be maybe a short-term AL-only play, but I wouldn't be excited about it. But hopefully, fingers crossed, this is just a small thing for Casas. It unfortunately didn't really seem that way. Seems like it could be an IL situation, but yeah, just early speculation at this point.
Dalbec, in a very small sample of 27 plate appearances, has a strikeout rate of 52%, but that's actually an improvement. Last year, in 53 plate appearances, he had a strikeout rate of 53%. So, yeah, I don't think I'm taking a shot there, even if he is named as the everyday guy.
They did have CJ Cron in camp, and I don't think he's signed anywhere yet. So I guess technically they could bring him back. He would be more relevant, I suppose. But yeah, again, I would, you know, yeah, definitely more relevant than Bobby Dalbec, I would say, if they bring him back. But we don't even know if he's like game ready, so.
Right.
They might have to send him back to the minors for a bit anyway. So,
yeah, would hope that he could manage a strikeout rate under 50%, though. So somebody to keep an eye on. And, of course, if he gets to hit balls off the Green Monster, not a bad landing spot. Other news, Jack Leiter was optioned after his poor debut. You figured somebody with his past pedigree as, you know, a very early first-round pick was going to be given a legitimate chance and not just called up to make a spot start, maybe, but he didn't really look like he deserved more than just a spot start. So looks like we may not see him for some time.
Yeah. I watched most of that game, pretty much all the time that he was in. The stuff looked pretty good, but the location was just not great. He was leaving a lot of balls over the middle of the plate, and the fastball looked pretty straight. He also had there was a misplay by Leody Taveras behind him as well that was not ruled an error, so that hurt the ERA. But yeah, Jack Leiter, prior to this year, I mean, he'd been a pretty big disappointment for a prospect perspective. Really uneven results, really poor control he'd shown in the minors, but had seemed like it was taking a step forward both in spring training and early on at AAA Round Rock. And I wouldn't rule out him having some relevancy at some point this season if he has taken a step forward with the command. But he didn't show it in that first start, and I don't think we can necessarily count on him coming back to the majors soon.
Yeah, a walk rate north of 13% in both 2022 and 2023 in the minors for Leiter. So those command issues, nothing new, not a surprise to see those in his big league debut. Just a quick look at a few other relevant bits from yesterday's box scores before we move on to our fab pickups. Wanted to mention that Garrett Crochet got rocked by the Phillies. Maybe I wanted to put here just because it was the Phillies that did it, and I wanted to say go Phillies. But mostly I wanted to throw this on here because Garrett Crochet has been probably the second most talked about pitcher this season after Jared Jones. Is that fair? And so Garrett Crochet, the first time he has a bad start, it's news. Last start was kind of a bad start. He gave up 5 runs in 4 2/3 against the Reds, but he did strike out 10 batters. This outing against the Phillies, just unequivocally bad. 7 runs, 3 innings, 3 homers allowed. 2 to Alec Boehm, 1 to Whit Merrifield, just 3 strikeouts. And I believe that Garrett Crochet has now passed his innings total from last season. So are we just seeing a guy who's just used up all his bullets for the year and he's done? He's fading out. He's going to be out of the rotation in a couple starts. What's going on here?
That might be a little extreme. I know the home run that Alec Boehm hit, I think it was on a 100 mile per hour fastball or something in the high 90s. He still had his velo yesterday, but the Phillies didn't have any trouble squaring him up. And I think it's probably just a good reminder that Garrett Crochet, I've been excited by what he's done, just like everyone else, but this is the first time he's literally been a starter since, Tennessee, in his college days. So, and I think he was actually a reliever for a good portion of that time in college. But, so just a reminder that he's definitely not a finished product as far as a starting pitcher goes. And I don't know if he's necessarily like a sell-high candidate. I mean, everybody's in your league, I assume, is fully aware of the workload limitations that he's going to be under this season. So you hear fantasy experts talk about selling high on guys like that, but I generally don't think you can usually do it because people are aware of what's going on. So I think Crochet is, keep an eye on the ups and downs. There probably will be some, but I think he's still definitely a hold for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Just wanted to be a little tongue-in-cheek there. His ERA, though, is like 560-something. So much for that much-hyped guy. No, his strikeout to walk is still excellent. 34 strikeouts against 6 walks. So still plenty to like about Garrett Crochet. But if you thought he was the truth and was, a top-5 pitcher in baseball, all right, well, that's why we, wait 5 starts to see what actually happens. Over more than just 1 or 2 outings. A few more things to touch on from yesterday. We saw Justin Verlander come back from injury, make his season debut, look pretty good. Jordan Montgomery also looked pretty good with his delayed start. Actually beat Blake Snell. It was a battle of the Boris clients who had to wait way too long to find teams.
One former Boris client.
True,
now.
True. The ex-Boris client, Montgomery, won, right? He was the one who switched, yep. And that was the answer. So good news there if you had those guys. Also, Nathaniel Lowe, if you have him, he has returned as of today. Is there anything to note there in terms of players losing time that we should be thinking about dropping now in Texas?
I suppose very deep leagues, people might have given Jared Walsh a shot after he had a great spring and won a job, but he got DFA'd as part of that situation. So if for some reason you were still hanging on to him, feel free to kick him to the curb.
Yeah, still room for example, Josh Smith to play at third base, some guy we talked about in the past. We are about to get to our fab ads, although before that, let's throw in this one. We were talking about catchers replacing Francisco Alvarez. So there's a question about 3 catchers here. I think the answer is the middle guy here, Travis d'Arnaud or Bo Naylor or Henry Davis. D'Arnaud's off to actually a very good start replacing Sean Murphy, who's currently injured. But Bo Naylor a month ago would have been well ahead of those two. So would you be picking up Bo Naylor? Let's say he may have well have been dropped, right, in those 1 catcher leagues. If you're losing Alvarez, go get Bo Naylor.
Yep, he would be my choice of those three. Yeah, and Henry Davis has unfortunately not been able to carry over that great spring he's had. I wonder if he actually might get sent down for a while once Yasmani Grandal is ready, because they have Joey Bart there who I don't believe has any options. So they could give kind of Henry Davis kind of a reset back at back at Triple A Indianapolis. But yeah, I think Bo Naylor's the clear top option of those three.
And one other catcher-related one, just while we're on the subject. Somebody else who lost Alvarez. Should I prioritize Travis d'Arnaud over Mitch Garver? Garver, again, off to quite a poor start. d'Arnaud playing well. Which of those veterans would you go?
I'm still riding with Garver. If you're in a league where you think Mitch Garver will remain on the waiver wire and you want to just play the hotter hand, you could go with d'Arnaud. But over the long term, I'm still definitely going with Garver.
Yeah, I think I would do the same. We will now move on to our top fab buys of the weekend right after this message from Vivid Seats. Finally, baseball is back. This MLB season, knock it out of the park with Vivid Seats and score great tickets to the biggest games of the year. Every fastball, every home run, and every eye-popping play of your favorite team live and in person. Plus, with Vivid Seats rewards, you earn rewards with every single purchase. Just buy 10 tickets, then cash in your credit towards your free 11th ticket. Talk about an easy win. And here's a pro reward tip. When buying tickets for your whole group, split the bill and make progress towards your free 11th ticket even faster. From behind the dugout to the upper deck, Vivid Seats has great tickets for all the 2024 games that matter to you. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. See vividseats.com/rewards for terms and conditions.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Back here on the Saturday edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Eric Altman, Ryan Boyer. We are now moving on to the main topic of the day, our priority fab ads. Who are you looking to pick up in waivers this weekend? As usual, we're going to start with the biggest names, which means a lot of these guys in this first section already rostered in your deep leagues, but these are guys who are moving from deep league consideration to 10 and 12 league consideration. There's also a few guys who are just joining the player pool, who just got called up this week, who probably are of interest in all league formats. Which direction are you going to go to start things off here, Ryan?
Going with Jake Fraley from the Reds, a guy who I feel like's kind of been underrated for a couple years now. I mean, when he's in the lineup, when he's healthy, he produces. Certainly has so far this year. 378, 440, 533 is his slash line so far. Got one home run. Already 5 stolen bases. Also has been caught stealing 3 times, so 8 attempts already on the base paths. He's definitely in a strict platoon. I believe at last check he's literally started every game against righties and sat every game against lefties. So the definition of a strict platoon there. So keep an eye on his upcoming matchups. You can't play him when they're going to be facing a lot of lefties. But last year, 2023, 15 home runs, 21 stolen bases, and 380 plate appearances, basically essentially a half season's worth of at-bats and lots of production. You go over his per 162 games since joining the Reds at 266, average 23 home runs and 25 stolen bases. So great park that he's in. Some power, some speed. He's got an injury history. He's not going to play against lefties. So I guess that's why he's maybe in my eyes a little overlooked sometimes. But Jake Fraley, when he's playing, and when you've got an upcoming week of lots of righties the Reds are facing, and even better, if they're going to be at home for that week, then that's a guy you want to have in your lineup.
I'm a big fan of Jake Fraley. That platoon situation, that isn't going to change for his career. A 120 WRC plus against righties, a 52 WRC plus against lefties. So don't go out there picking him up thinking, hey, you know, if he keeps playing well, maybe he'll play against lefties. Not going to happen. But like you said, when they've got a week full of righties, he's a full-time player and he's really quite good. Probably doesn't need a huge fab outlay either in a shallower league because of that very thing you mentioned. He's not quite a true everyday player. So maybe just a 2-4, 3-5% range probably.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely single digits probably, but is all it would take.
Yep. Similar range probably for my next guy here, Ryan O'Hearn. Notice him getting picked up in a ton of shallow leagues this week, mostly because he's had a bunch of multi-hit games, a bunch of homers. He had three straight two-hit games with a homer earlier this week. So if people are just picking him up in response to that, it's not necessarily the best process. I wouldn't think too differently of O'Hearn than I did a month ago, except that, you know, he's still here and he's still playing. And you might have thought that this Baltimore team would have advanced beyond the need for Ryan O'Hearn by now. And that hasn't happened. He won't be playing against lefties, just like Jake Fraley, but playing against every righty, hitting right in the heart of the order, basically hitting third or fourth, pretty much every game against a righty, in the middle of a very good lineup. Also, he is showing some improvement this season. So what I said about I wouldn't think about him too differently, you might want to think about him a little differently because he's only striking out 10.5% of the time so far. He's somebody whose strikeout rate has been either in the high 20s early in his career, down towards the low mid-20s recently. If this is a substantial increase in his ability to make contact, or even, let's say, a modest one, and he maintains his ability to hit the ball hard, his hard hit rate is right in line with where it was last year, and his barrel rate at 17% is excellent. I don't know if I think he's going to be way better than last year, but I wasn't fully bought in after him doing this for just part of the season last year. The more he keeps doing it, and if he gets help from that role in that lineup, I'm pretty interested in Ryan O'Hearn. I don't think I'll have to go more than $3 to $5 for him in a shallow league, but I think that I'm down with Ryan O'Hearn as an all formats guy, not just a deep league sleeper.
Yep, I'm good with that level of investment. I mean, I saw we had a question in our chat about Heston Kjerstad, and understandably, I think a lot of people want to see him get a shot. And I mean, it would probably, I guess, be at the expense of O'Hearn. He can play some outfield, some first base, could fill in it. It doesn't need a hitter. But, you know, people have been trying to kick Ryan O'Hearn off the roster just because he's not a young stud like all the other Orioles, seemingly. But he's been productive and little bit of past pedigree from his Royals days. I mean, that flamed out pretty quickly. Remember back his rookie year, he was pretty interesting. He was productive and also just absolutely crushed the ball. That fizzled out in Kansas City, but maybe he's rediscovering that a little bit. So I'm with you that certainly in deeper leagues, he needs to be rostered. Next guy, I think definitely needs to be rostered pretty much universally at this point. He's doing some very interesting things. Luis Garcia, I think he's actually Luis Garcia Jr. now, which is helpful because there's like six Luis Garcias that at some point or another have been fantasy relevant. So I'm glad he added the Jr. onto his name to
which team and position are we going for with this Luis Garcia? I think I know, but we better clarify.
Second baseman for the Nationals, that Luis Garcia Jr. Yeah, coming into today, 296, 333, 481 is the slash line. He's got one home run, already four stolen bases, which if that's not a career high. I feel like it's pretty close. He's not a guy who's really run a whole lot, but he has been so far this year. Had a ninth in opening day, but the last four games he's hit either cleanup or fifth. The batted ball data is taking a huge jump this year. 52.3% hard hit rate, 15.9% barrel rate for Luis Garcia. He's nearly doubled his launch angle from last year. So I don't remember reading anything about him being like a driveline guy or what, but it seems like he's definitely made some changes that have definitely worked out at so far. And we're talking about a former top prospect. He's still only 23 years old. He came up really young for the Nationals and has shown some flashes here and there, but you know, he spent some time back in the minors last year. I don't know that he was necessarily even guaranteed a regular job coming into spring training, but he looks like a new player, and I'm very interested. Again, former top prospect, still only 23 years old, so it looks like he might have just figured something out. Now batting in the middle, as I mentioned, of the Nationals lineup, that's not a great lineup to be in the middle of, but you know, you have Babe Ruth, a.k.a. C.J. Abrams, at the top of that now. So very interested in Luis Garcia. I think he's – you look at his rostership in like TGFBI, it's up pretty high. So those deeper leagues, he's probably going to be rostered already, but he's still very available in the shallower league. So I would look his direction.
Yeah, and probably might actually need some real bid on him, you know, 6 to 8% or something. Might have to go that high to win him.
Yeah, I mean, maybe even higher. I wouldn't be against a double-digit bid, just especially if you have a need at that position.
Yeah, you mentioned you weren't sure if he was a driveline guy. What he might just be is a 24-year-old, and that's the trick with Luis Garcia. This is his fifth MLB season, and so all of us have formed a picture of who Luis Garcia is, probably, if you are following baseball close enough to know about guys who aren't full-time players and who are bouncing on and off the roster for several years. Then you know this guy, and you know him as someone who's bounced on and off the roster for several years, and it's hard to throw all of that out at once and say, but wait a second, what is he doing right now? Now, of course, we don't always want to throw all of that out because that past data informs who he is, but he was so young. I mean, if he was just in the minors for his age 20 through age 23 season and then came up now and is showing what he's shown through 3-4 weeks, we'd probably have picked him up in more places already, I would think. It's just that we have 4 years of him being just bleh, and that's hard to get rid of in our minds, I think. But still, so young. If he just has 4 years where he's not really anything and then goes on to have a long career starting today as a decent or better player, that would not be out of the ordinary. Actually, I say he's 24. It's his age 24 season. He's still 23. Yeah. He's still 23 for three more months, or one more month, it looks like. Anyway, on to the next guy, Ahmed Rosario. He has been owned in deeper leagues, I think, probably since the start of the year, but not generating much shallow league interest until recently, which I think was just because he's gotten hot at the plate. Several multi-hit games in the last week, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of 7 games in a row, looks like, were multi-hit games. So the numbers are catching the eye, and everybody's starting to look to Ahmed Rosario. But I think there's reasons beyond just, you know, 18 games worth of performance for him. It's mostly just that he's been decent enough and has now found himself in an organization, the Rays, that get the most out of players who are at least decent or better. So I'm more willing to buy into small sample good performances from a player who joins the Rays. Is that illogical? I don't think so. 2 homers, 2 steals. Suddenly he's got a barrel rate in the double digits. His hard hit rate, 49%. He's basically sitting in the low or high 30s in every other year of his career, a 38% for his career heading into this season. If Ahmed Rosario just took a jump as soon as he joined the Rays, that really wouldn't surprise us. And maybe it took a week for it to show up, but people are starting to pick him up in shallow leagues. I think that you want to get him before he's gone everywhere.
Yeah, and I don't know if you mentioned or not, but you know, triple eligible as well.
Yeah.
And I mean, part of the reason that he seemingly kind of fell off so much is a guy who's, I think, still in his 20s, maybe 28.
Yeah.
Is because his defense was so bad, but the Rays have him playing mostly in the outfield. So if they're willing to kind of hide him in the outfield and not have to deal with his infield defense, then you just have to, you get to reap the rewards of him offensively. And, you know, I distinctly remember over the offseason before he signed anywhere, I was listening to James Anderson. I think maybe he had the robot on, Phil. What is it? Phil Dussault?
Phil
Dussault. Yeah. I made him from New Orleans there for a second. But yeah, James distinctly said, Omed Rosario is such a fit for the Rays that I can't believe they haven't signed him yet. And then lo and behold, they signed him, and nice. Now he's been awesome for them. So spoiler alert, James knows what he's talking about. But yeah, I'm with you that I give the Rays the benefit of the doubt to a certain degree, and still talking about a young player, as I mentioned, and maybe he's just figured something out and multi-position eligible. So I think he's definitely interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of young,
the number, I'll just probably go at least 5 or 6 on him.
Oh yeah,
I think you do want him. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of young, Jonathan Clase from the Mariners, just 21 years of age. He came up to replace Dominic Canzone after he went on the injured list. 4 straight starts in left field since his promotion coming into today. He's got a stolen base. Last year at 2023, between high A and double A, 20 home runs, 79 stolen bases. Not a typo there, or I'm looking at the right number. I looked at the right column on Baseball Reference, I promise. 79 stolen bases. So definitely has some speed. And for a small guy, the scouts say that his pop is pretty legitimate. So he's got potentially double-digit type home run power. He's a switch hitter. Dominic Canzone, as I mentioned, is on the injured list. And even after he comes back, if Class A hits, again, we're talking about a 21-year-old. But if he hits, I think there's definitely a path for him to stay, whether it's at Canzone's expense or Mitch Haniger getting hurt again. We know that's certainly a possibility. I feel like there is a path for him to get at-bats if he performs. Again, just a 21-year-old is having his first taste of AAA this year. So don't know if he's ready to perform at the major league level, but a guy with that kind of speed and also a little bit of pop, I think he's definitely interesting. I would at least go 5 for him for a bid.
Yeah, it's very format dependent, I would think. If you're in a points league and you don't care about steals, I would go 0. But if you are in a categories league and somebody who needs speed, especially, 5 might not even be enough. He's an interesting profile. You often like your speed first guys to be contact over power. But, you know, we've seen that it hasn't worked with Victor Scott so far this year. And maybe I'm thinking negative things about Class A because of that experience or something. Class A could well be, you know, a Jose Siri type. That's an example of a guy who strikes out way too much but has speed and has power, and the whole thing just kind of works, even though it's kind of awkward. Even if you'd rather see him just slap and run and steal 90 bases, could still work for Class A. I'm going with an outfielder who's at a different stage of his career here, Jesse Winker. We may have mentioned him in the past as a deep league guy, but I'm throwing him on this section this week because Jesse Winker, I think he's back to being an all formats, very solid outfielder. He's only in his age 30 season, and it hasn't been that long since he was really quite good. If you look at 2020 and 2021 combined, he hit 292, 392, 552 over those 2 seasons, or, you know, a season and a half, because one of them was 2020. When he's at his best, he makes a ton of contact and walks a ton and actually has above average contact, not necessarily elite, but above average in the amount and quality of your contact. That's enough. He's also stolen 2 bases this year. Wouldn't count on that, but it's already a career high. So, you know, maybe he actually is someone who could get you 6 to 8 under the new rules and not zero or one. And also, he's playing all the time. He's batting second against righties and somebody who used to be platooned always. He's even starting against lefties, which is, I think, definitely part of the reason why he now has shallow league appeal in addition to just deep league appeal. Of course, could lose playing time to a James Wood or something in the future, but Winker is really hitting a 10-10 OPS so far. So I health concerns certainly at some point, but get him on your roster now. He's a good player. I don't think you'll have to go a ton just because he's Jesse Winker and people have seen a pretty bad version of him for a bit, but at least three or four is probably going to be enough to get somebody who, again, he can really hit. He's hit before and he's doing it right now, so why not?
Yeah, shallower leagues, that might be enough, but I can speak from experience in trying to add him in a deeper league. Last week, I severely underestimated the Jesse Winker appeal.
Yeah,
because I put in bids and did not come close to getting him. So yeah, if you're the Jesse Winker window might be closing, if it is still open. But yeah, I mean, he's, I think this is the first off season he had that was just quote unquote normal off season, that he wasn't rehabbing from surgery or just kind of generally banged up. So that can make a big difference. I mean, he's still only like, what, 30 years old. Yep. And as you mentioned, he's not that long ago. We were really, I mean, I was really interested in him last year going to Milwaukee. I thought he was going to have a nice bounce back season. I rostered him as a fifth outfielder and I just don't think he was ever healthy, but he's healthy now. And as you said, he's even playing against lefties. That's probably going to hurt his average a little bit, but it's going to help the counting stats. So yeah, I'm definitely back in on Jesse Winker. Andy Páez is up for the Dodgers. Going into today, three straight starts since his promotion. He's played both center field and right field. 23 years of age, had 11.46 OPS with 5 home runs and 2 steals already in his first 15 games at AAA Oklahoma City. Missed most of the 2023 season recovering from shoulder labrum surgery. That can be an injury that's not easy to come back from, but his early production at AAA would suggest that he's back to being totally healthy. And there's a reason why he was viewed as a top 100 prospect. Lots of swing and miss in his game. I don't think he's going to hit for batting average, especially in his first go around in the big leagues, but he's got elite power potential. Jason Hayward's recovery from a back injury has kind of lingered a little bit. So maybe there's going to be an opening for Páez for a while. And also I know he was productive last year, but I don't know that we can necessarily count on staying power from Jason Hayward. So maybe if Páez does perform, there's a path for him to have regular playing time throughout the season. I'm certainly interested enough in a redraft to take a, you know, 3-4 bid probably.
The fact that he's gotten off to a poor start in what is just 4 games or something is going to keep the bids from being crazy, right? Because if you think about he's not a top tier prospect, but he's a prospect people have heard of on a very good team, the Dodgers. That's the kind of player who could go for 12-15% if he showed something, you know, if he homered twice today or something, then maybe suddenly there's a ton of excitement. But I think so far he's had 2 strikeouts in his 2 plate appearances. So if he keeps struggling, that'll keep the bids to a reasonable level and probably won't ruin our confidence in him too much because it's just a few games. Let's move on to the pitchers. Jameson Taillon just came back for his season debut. Looked pretty decent as he works his way back from back issues that delayed his start to the season. He's actually going to be out there in a few deeper leagues, especially ones without injured lists, because he's not really exciting enough to stash. Looks like he's still available in 15% of TGFBI leagues. Did not have a very good year last year. His ERA jumped up to 4.84, but underlying numbers didn't show that much of a step back, really. He's not exciting, and the tricky thing about including him in today's episode is that there aren't going to be too many deep leagues where he's out there, and in the shallow leagues, he's just kind of a guy So I wouldn't go too much on him, maybe just a 2-3% in those shallow leagues. I think he's going to be someone you use enough of the time, but not someone you're totally excited to have. But again, there's not always proven starters who are fine who enter the player pool this time of year. So go get him if you have to.
Yeah, and I don't know if our listeners have and watchers have heard, but there've been a few pitcher injuries this year. So a guy like Jameson Taillon, even though he might be unexciting, he can be certainly useful, at least at the very least, to put on your bench and put him in there when he's got two starts or he's got a favorable matchup. Another guy who not exactly fit the same mold, but I think he probably should be valued fairly similarly, Jose Buto, off to a really good start, his first two starts with the Mets. Although I think he was supposed to start today. I did not see the line today, admittedly. First two starts, he went 12 innings, one run, five hits, a 15-4 strikeout to walk rate, 34.1% strikeout rate, hasn't allowed a single barrel. He's allowed zero hits and has a 35.7% whiff rate on his four-seamer, which is just an insanely high rate for a four-seam fastball. I think there's definitely room to stick in the Mets rotation. They're looking for starting pitching help. He's in a good park for pitchers. The control has been a problem definitely for him in the past. I see one of our chatters say, he went 4 1/3 innings, 6 strikeouts. That's not bad. I don't know what the earned runs and the walks were today, but I think Jose Buto is, as I mentioned, probably should be valued fairly similarly as a guy like Jameson Taillon. A guy is worth keeping on your bench. Start him in 2-start weeks. 1-start weeks where he's got a favorable matchup, but I don't think you have to go too crazy on a bid. I think 2-3, and you know, if he winds up going for more than that, then you should probably be okay with it.
Yeah, I'll give you his full line from today's start because it might keep the bids somewhat more reasonable. Now keep in mind that this was against the Dodgers, so great on a curve here, but only 4 1/3. He did get 6 strikeouts but 5 walks, 3 hits, 2 earned runs. So 2 earned runs and 4 1/3 isn't horrible. 5 walks is but you know, he had 2 good starts and one that wasn't good, but not the worst, and was against the Dodgers. So definitely still like the guy, I would say. Final guy in this Fab priority section is Kirby Yates. He may have slipped over the 50% threshold in some shallower leagues, but not all of them. Certainly if you're doing weekly waivers and not daily waivers. Well, he didn't actually take over the closer job in Texas officially in terms of picking up his first save until earlier this week. If you grabbed him last weekend, I think this time last weekend, we had David Robertson in this section, and we may have thrown Kirby Yates on as, hey, maybe this guy. But within hours of us putting out the podcast, it looked like Yates was maybe more likely to be the guy, and that is indeed the case. So if Yates is still out there in your league, which he's going to be out there, I think a lot of ESPN and CBS leagues in particular, I noticed, he's a closer, right? I mean, he's the Rangers closer. Jose Leclerc might get the job later. David Robertson could push for it at some point, but Kirby Yates is the closer right now. He's pitching great, and he's pitched great in the not too distant past. Just before Tommy John surgery a couple years ago, there was a period of a year or two where he was a top 5, top 3 reliever. So I like Kirby Yates a lot. I've already picked him up a lot of places, and if he's available, go get him.
Yeah, mea culpa on Kirby Yates. I feel like I pushed pretty hard for David Robertson last week. He seemed like he was probably going to be the guy to me. Or maybe I just was assuming that he would be elevated into the closer role, but it definitely looks like it's Kirby Yates. And I agree with you. He's still an effective reliever, and I think he could definitely keep that job. Leclerc, you know, I mentioned last week, but he got off to a really rotten start last year as well, and it was really good the rest of the way. So I think there is a path for him to get that job back, but Kirby Yates is certainly good enough to pitch well enough to keep that gig.
Yeah, and as far as the number, you got to know your league here. In the RotoWire Stake League, I had to go up to 39 to get him. That's a league with $0 bids, so you can afford to go lower, and you know you'll still be able to make pickups late in the season. I just saw closers were going for 35-ish, and I needed a closer.
Is that with 100 of FAB or 1,000?
Yeah, yep, 39 out of 100, but okay. With the $0 bids, that makes it feel a little bit bigger in the end. So know your league there. You might only need 15, 10%. You might need 39. We're going to move on to our budget players after this message from our sponsor, On Demand DFS. Do you ever think back to the golden days of fantasy football? You know, when it was all about the love of the game, the camaraderie, and yes, the bragging rights? Well, our friends at On Demand DFS are bringing those days back with their revolutionary app that's changing the game for fantasy fans everywhere. Gone are the days of confusing entry fees, playing against unknown masses, or juggling multiple apps to track trash talk with your league mates. On Demand DFS is here to streamline your fantasy football experience, making it more about strategy, fun, and most importantly, the community. With On Demand DFS, you can create a contest in seconds, invite your friends, and you're off to the races. No entry fees, no gimmicks, just pure fantasy football bliss. And here's the kicker. You're not limited to current season players. Imagine crafting your dream lineup from over 5,000 NFL legends and today's stars using real historical data to simulate the action. And for those who hate the wait, you'll love Turbo Mode. Contests wrap up in minutes, not hours, keeping the excitement going all week long. Download the On Demand DFS now, DFS app now, and get started with a 30-day free trial. Dive into a fantasy football experience that's rich in history, strategy, and most importantly, fun. It's time to create your legacy with the ultimate lineup of legends and live out your fantasy football dreams like never before. Thank you, On Demand DFS. We are back here on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast with our fab recommendations of the week. We've gone through all of our big buys, including some shallow league guys and some guys who just got called up this week. Try to speed through our budget section here, starting with the pitchers. And we should mention again, as we said last week, we found ourselves saying it's 1% on all these guys, so assume that. Assume something close to minimum bid on all these guys unless we say something otherwise. With that in mind, who is your first budget pitcher here?
I've got Nick Nastrini from the White Sox. Good MLB debut last week against the Royals, or earlier this week. 5 innings, 2 runs, 5 strikeouts. He's a guy who came over from the Dodgers along with Jordan Leisure. Look, that's going to turn out to be, I think, a pretty good trade for the White Sox. It's the one that sent Lance Lynn and Joe Kelly to the Dodgers. Nastrini had a 6.89 ERA his final year at UCLA, and then the Dodgers got their hands on him and turned into a pretty good pitching prospect. 32.8% strikeout rate during his time in the minors. Also had an 11.1% walk rate, so maybe that's the reason the Dodgers were willing to part with him. He's not with the Dodgers anymore. He's gone the complete opposite on the team context scale with the White Sox. So keep that in mind. And it's also not a great park to pitch in, but I think he's got some skills, certainly some bat missing ability. Seems like the White Sox are going to let him get additional starts. So I think he's a viable add in deeper formats.
Yeah, I think he's worth a look, especially when he's got decent matchups. How about Landon Knack? He's my first guy here. He was just called up by the Dodgers, made his MLB debut earlier this week against the Nationals. It was pretty good. 2 earned runs in 5 innings, so 1 walk, 4 hits, 4 strikeouts. Nothing too special here, but when you're getting opportunities to start for the Dodgers, that's basically all you need in terms of deeper leagues. If you are okay and going to start games for the Dodgers, that's interesting, no matter what. And Landon Knack is at least okay. Not a top-tier prospect, but not a non-prospect either. His numbers throughout the minors, he's generally running strikeout rates closer to 30% than 20. Again, not elite numbers here, but there's enough. His next start will be, assuming he stays in the rotation, will be against the same Nationals. Which theoretically, that's not great. Although I was talking to Todd Zola on the radio the other day, and he said that the numbers don't actually show that benefits the offense, even though you'd think that might. So give Landon Knack a shot, and if he sticks around for longer in this Dodgers rotation, great. And if he doesn't, I think I'm at least happy using him next week.
I just wanted to put this question up real quick from somebody just joining in. Jose Buto, I think we settled on a fairly low bid, but given that the context of your question, the Mets fan keeper league, you need to be aggressive. I mean, if you really want him in that situation, it probably might take a double-digit bid, but I don't know that I would go that far. I think if it's a Mets fan keeper league, then you might be best off, given his potential control issues, to probably stay clear. I would probably still keep it in the 5 to 6-ish range. And if someone goes farther than that, then I would just say it probably wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. One quick thing to add in there, though, with Fab in a keeper league, you can think about it in terms of just what number would I be comfortable keeping this guy at next year, especially if you're thinking long-term with a guy like Buto. Obviously, sure, late in the year, treat it like a redraft league. But if you find a number you'd be happy drafting Buto at next year, sure, that's your number.
I'm going to go with Jake Irvin as my next guy. Speaking of the Dodgers, I know we've mentioned matchups against them. He had 6 shutout innings against the Dodgers his last start, just 4 hits and 1 walk with 6 strikeouts. His previous outing, he also went 6 innings, just 1 run, just 1 hit allowed. So trending in the right direction, certainly. He's got a 31% whiff rate with his 4-seamer. Great, great total there. 251 expected wOBA. Velocity is so-so, but he's got good spin, good extension. Showed some flashes last year during his time in the Nationals rotation. I know he had one really good start against the Dodgers in September, had another one against your Phillies in August. He's not like a top 100 prospect, but he's a solid pitching prospect, and he's shown a little bit of upside of late. I think it's a deeper league, definitely play, but I think he belongs in the same kind of context as like a Nick Nastrini. So I would, you know, as we mentioned at the top of this, it's a single bid, just like 1 or 2, but I think Jake Irvin is worthy of a deep league roster spot.
Yeah, especially because he should have a very locked in rotation spot. Anybody who does anything in Washington, they're a starter the rest of the year. So I like that one with Jake Irvin. Moving to the bullpen here, I threw Trevor McGill on our list this week again, coming back from a concussion. He was a pickup right before the start of the season when the Brewers' closer job became open, and then it became clear that Abner Uribe was just the closer. He was used as a traditional closer the opening series. Didn't he get saves in literally the first 3 games for the Brewers, something like that? Or
first 2.
Okay, and then he got their first 3 saves. He had his 3rd one very quick, I think. Whatever it was, there was no doubt that it was Abner Uribe, the closer, but you know, he hasn't actually pitched that well, and they've started using him in very much non-closer situations. I believe today he pitched, he got 5 outs in a game that the Brewers won by 7 runs. He was pitching in the 7th and 8th innings of a not particularly close game there. So I think this 9th inning is open again in Milwaukee. We could easily have thrown Yoel Piamps on this list, except that he's owned in too many deep leagues to make our cut here. And I'm not yet sure I'm grabbing Piamps or McGill in a shallower league because I don't know. I probably can find actual closers there. But in deeper leagues, McGill will have been dropped. Nobody was going to keep a concussed setup man. So he will have been dropped in most places where he was picked up. I think he's just as interesting as he was on the eve of the regular season. So I'd be going out and getting Trevor McGill again, even though he could not be the guy. Piamps is probably ahead of him. But again, Piamps is probably owned. McGill's probably out there. So go get him if you've got a spot.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this Brewers closer situation. I mean, Uribe has not been great, but they have really seemed to have completely bailed on him as the closer option, given his usage. You know, you mentioned how he was used today. He also pitched in like the 4th inning earlier this week or late last week, and is going multiple innings as well. It just doesn't. Maybe they're just giving him a reset and they want to throw him back in the closer role. But you know, last night it seemed like they wanted to stay away from both Uribe and Piamps in the game against the Cardinals, but they gave McGill a 2nd inning in his first outing back from the IL. But then Cardinals got a two out rally going, and they put Piamps in. The Cardinals broadcast mentioned that he had only thrown like two warm up pitches, and then they brought him in, and then he like walked a guy, hit a guy, and then walked another guy to force him the tying run. So it seemed like he was still getting warmed up. I would probably put Piamps at the top of that list right now. I actually had him initially on our priorities list for this show. But given how last night unfolded, I kind of shied away from that. But I would, it's a situation that's very much up in the air. I'd probably put him on top, but McGill for sure, if he's available in a deeper league, is worth rostering. Another reliever, Reed Garrett. Is he the pop-up reliever of the year? I mean, you know as well as everyone, Eric, that every year there's relievers that seemingly come out of nowhere and are suddenly awesome. And Reed Garrett has been that this year. Coming into this season, he had a 7.11 ERA, a 32-28 strikeout to walk rate, and 44 and one-third innings. Very, very bad. And now, all of a sudden, his age 31 season, he's given up 0 earned runs, an 18-3 strikeout to walk rate, and 9 2/3 innings. He's faced 38 batters, and he struck out 18 of them. He's a very rare five-pitch reliever, but the slider, splitter, and sweeper, his primary pitchers, and all three of them have at least a 41.7% whiff rate. Keep in mind there's zero saves potential here as long as Edwin Diaz is healthy, but Reed Garrett in a deeper league, certainly worth rostering. You got to – relievers, you know, we mentioned this with Luis Garcia Jr. earlier – about kind of trying to forget a little bit to a certain degree what they've shown in the past. But relievers, you should be willing to turn the page very quickly because sometimes they can just figure it out. And Reed Garrett looks like he's done that. So I think he's definitely worth rostering in deeper formats.
Yeah, I like that shout. And that one's for you, person in the comments who always says, hey, we need some saves and holds names. The saves and holds people, they know that they don't get nearly enough love because we're all talking about who's going to get saved. So there's a name for you. Also another name for you, saves and holds people. I threw Jojo Romero on this list because I noticed him getting picked up. He shows up on the most added lists in places like CBS where they're often not the deepest of leagues in some of these sites, but he's been popping up a little bit lately. And I threw him on here mostly because I want to ask you about it because you are a Cardinals fan, Ryan. Jojo Romero, I knew him as a Phillies prospect who broke through kind of and then was traded for Edmundo Sosa, who was a utility infielder. And I kind of lost track of Jojo Romero at that point. He's a middle reliever who gets traded for a utility infielder. I thought that's all he was. I don't think he's getting picked up because people think he's about to become a closer, but man, his numbers are really good. A 1.86 ERA, 0.62 whip. He's got 13 strikeouts against just one walk in 9 2/3 innings. Is this a real player who deserves to be rostered even in places where, you know, they really wish he could get saves? Because I don't think he's going to get any.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that Jojo Romero did in his Phillies days is when he went viral for that. I don't know if you saw the video of him coming in from the bullpen. He chugged like a Red Bull and then smashed the can on his wrist as he was coming into the game. So that was
good.
That was my first impression of Jojo Romero when I had to look him up after the Cardinals traded for him. But I think he's definitely a viable, you know, middle reliever setup man. And Ryan Helsley has had injury problems in the past. So it's certainly Jojo Romero did get some saves, some stray saves last season. The Cardinals have mentioned that they want to use Helsley as a very traditional three out closer this year. So I think he's definitely going to be the guy there as long as he's healthy. But Jojo Romero is good enough that, you know, he falls into the Reed Garrett bucket to where he could have some value in deeper leagues, even if he's not picking up saves, particularly in your holds leagues. He should definitely be rostered. Also mentioned or saw someone mention in the chat about Joe Adell, and he's on my deep league list. Coming in today, 3 starts in his last 5 games. Not ideal, but it's an uptick from earlier in the season. And he's been productive when on the field. He's hitting .276. He's got a home run. Already 5 stolen bases and an additional 2 caught stealing. So he's attempted 7 already in a relatively limited role. Just turned 25. Could there be some, what's the term? I'm completely blanking on a former top prospect that's could suddenly resurface again.
Post-type sleeper. Post-type sleeper for Joe Adell.
That's it right there. Maybe this is him. I mean, I don't know that Joe Adell's ever going to be anything. In fact, I would probably bet against it at this point. He strikes out a ton. He has a tendency to make boneheaded plays both in the field and on the bases. And that probably isn't going to endear him to Ron Washington or the Angels organization. But as I mentioned, still just 25. Look at his numbers at AAA. 905 OPS, 60 home runs and 21 steals in 214 AAA games. So anytime he's gone back to the minors, he's absolutely crushed the ball. He hasn't really gotten like a really long-term look in the majors yet. I mean, he has been swinging and missing a lot in the chances he does get. But, I mean, the Angels, I know they're not ruling out being contenders this year, but I feel like given what how their roster is constructed, they really have nothing to lose to throw a Joe Adell out there pretty much every day. I mean, their DH spot is pretty much open. You can also play the outfield, and, you know, given their situation, I think they should be playing him more, and his playing time is ticking up of late, and he's been productive, so there are going to be peaks and valleys if he does get every day at bats for sure. But in a deep league, he's one of the rare guys that actually has some upside that could be available.
Yeah, like we talked about with Luis Garcia Jr. earlier, these guys that debut so young and aren't good for so long, we lock in an image of who they are. And if you've locked in an image of Joe Adell as really not a very good baseball player because he had a 625 OPS over parts of 4 seasons, that would have made some sense, but that was just his age 21 through age 24 seasons. If he was just struggling in the minors this whole time and debuted now, again, we'd be thinking of him differently. And he's only age 25, so if his career starts today, it could well look like a normal career. My first budget hitter here is Michael Massey, who missed the start of the season due to back issues. Expect him to be the primary, maybe every day, second baseman for the Royals going forward. Maybe he won't start against lefties, although, I mean, I guess it would be Garrett Hampson or something. It's Adam Frazier starting over him against lefties wouldn't make a ton of sense since they both bat left-handed. Massey, not great, but good enough to be owned in deep leagues and is likely to be available because he wasn't good enough to stash. So the fact that he's just coming into the player pool now means you'll probably want to get him. He strikes out at about a league average clip for his career, 22% up to this point, and has a 9% barrel rate. Granted, that was higher as a rookie than last year, but even last year, 7.8%, totally fine. He underperformed his expected metrics by quite a bit, hit .239, but his XBA was .260. His X slug was about 50 points higher than his slugging percentage as well. I think Massey is a totally fine hitter who plays for a Royals team that's better than it was last time we saw Michael Massey. I would not get excited about him, but if you need a second baseman, he's totally fine.
Yeah, Massey, if memory serves, he got off to just a absolutely horrendous start in April last year, and he was actually pretty decent the rest of the way. Like, I'm talking like one for 40 or something like that, just something crazy bad. I don't know if it was quite that bad, but yeah, he's, I think, a pretty decent hitter. It's a little bit of a weird situation because they, as you mentioned, they have 2 left-handed hitting second basemen. We don't know exactly how that playing time is going to work out, but in a deeper league, if he's available, he's got some upside. Gabriel Arias with the Guardians started just 4 of the first 13 games, but over the last 7 contests, he's started 6 of them at 3 different positions, has an 1156 OPS over that stretch. Brian Rocchio's been the everyday shortstop, but he's got a 613 OPS. I don't know that they're going to necessarily want to make a change yet, but those two were battling for the shortstop job in spring training before Rocchio won out. And Arias, even if he's not going to take over regularly at short, he can fill in at multiple spots. He can offer that multi-position eligibility. Last year, he had a 91.1% average exit velocity and a 9.9% barrel rate. It's been down this year a bit, but still above league average. He's also up the launch angle a little bit this year. Strikeouts have been a problem for him. He kind of fixed his bizarre struggles versus lefties. He's a right-handed hitter, but last year against lefties, he was just obscenely bad. Like, he batted like 100 with like a 50% strikeout rate against lefties. But that is seemingly flukish splits from last year have kind of solved themselves this year. So I think Arias is a viable, certainly a deep league play. Even if he doesn't get the everyday shortstop job, I think he's going to fill in and play, you know, 4 to 5 times per week, offer that multi-position eligibility.
Yep. Moving on to Willier Abreu of the Red Sox. Tell me if you've ever heard a fantasy profile like this. He's got some power. He's got some speed. He strikes out too much. A whole lot of outfielders all over the world are exactly like Willier Abreu. He hasn't been in the majors for too long, only 44 games between last year and this year. So we're still getting a handle on just how far those knobs are tuned. 29% strikeout rate for his career with a 10% barrel rate. He's got 3 homers and 7 steals in 44 games for his career so far. So that's maybe a 10-25 kind of guy, or a 15-30 kind of guy or something, with what should be a low batting average. This year it's 233 for his career. It's 286 because he had a very much BABIP inflated line last year in 28 games. But there's a lot of things going on here with Abreu. If he hits just enough, he's not a big prospect, but he's not a non-prospect. And so I think the expectation here is he's going to be right on that line. But if he's playing, certainly against all the righties in Boston, and has a lot of different things that we might like about him, go take a chance on Willier Abreu. And then the final two guys I threw on the list here, basically it's just their team, Ellers Montero and Sean Bouchard. Do not care for either of them on their own merits. I'm sure they're very lovely people. On their own merits as baseball players. But hey, they play for the Rockies. The Rockies have a full week of home games. And if you've got anybody who's just okay enough, I think Montero's cut his strikeout rate a lot this year in the early going. So maybe Bouchard is somebody who didn't make the opening day roster. I think he was maybe a little slow in camp, but he's there now. Not excited about either of these guys, independent of their park, but hey, we got 7 games in Coors, so you might need these guys.
Yeah, quick little Sean Bouchard anecdote. When it looked like he was going to be, the beat writers were saying he's probably going to get the right field job. I rostered him in one deeper league and attempted multiple times to drop him and pick someone else with my fab, and didn't win any of those bids. So I got lucky that he's still on my roster after he got called up. So sometimes you can luck your way into a guy who has 7 games at Coors. So Sean Bouchard has been productive at times. Certainly in the minors at Triple A Albuquerque, he's been productive. So as you mentioned, it's more the park and the team than anything else, but he's could be viable for this week.
All right. Well, that was a very full show today. Hopefully we covered every player in baseball. Sorry if we didn't quite get to every name in the comments there, but we've been going for 70 minutes. So thank you, Ryan, and thank you, listeners. We'll be back next week with more fab recommendations, and I'll be back tomorrow with my guest, Kev Masarejon. We're going to be looking at everybody's sleepers from the draft season. How are they doing? Should we be dumping any of them yet, or keeping the faith, or hey, even buying high? Who knows? More of that tomorrow on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast.